We're going to turn our attention to a topic that we often discuss here on KGNU, and that is Rocky Flats. The former nuclear weapons plant is now being reframed as a wildlife refuge, and reportedly it is scheduled to open this coming weekend. But there is a lot of legal action trying to prevent that. And I have three members of the various different groups who are involved in all of that joining us in the studio to talk about the latest developments, their ongoing concerns, and really what has been happening around Rocky Flats. I'd like to welcome into the studio, we have from the organisation Candelas Glows, Michelle Gabrieloff Parish. Thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you.
Attorney Randall Weiner is the attorney representing the collection of groups that have been lodging legal efforts to prevent the opening of Rocky Flats. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Maeve.
And also joining us from the Rocky Mountain Peace and Justice Centre, Brittany Guttermuth. Thanks, Brittany.
Thanks for having us.
Well, Randall, I know you're an attorney and I know there is an ongoing legal case happening. So I understand if there are certain things that you can't disclose on air. But give our listeners a sense of the latest developments. The wildlife refuge is scheduled to open this weekend.
That's our understanding, Maeve. And the case is continuing in federal district court before Judge Philip Brimmer. And the five groups are seeking to convince this judge that the Fish and Wildlife Service has violated environmental laws by opening the refuge without conducting the types of studies that should be done before a significant federal action of this type is taken.
No, the last time we spoke to you, Randall, it was a couple of weeks ago. There was another legal action. You had basically tried to block this weekend scheduled opening until all of the other legal cases had run its course. Isn't that correct?
That's pretty much correct. There's a technique known as preliminary injunction that one can seek in the middle of a case. And we brought forth seven witnesses from Tim Musso, who had written over 200 papers on Chernobyl and Fukushima, to Harvey Nichols, who had actually done testing personally down at the plant when it was a predecessor to the Department of Energy plant. We had samplers who had sampled plutonium off-site. So many folks don't realize that plutonium has migrated off the refuge, and indeed a federal case provided hundreds of millions of dollars to neighbors for plutonium contamination that had migrated from Rocky Flats onto properties, causing the potential for health damages. So we brought this to the attention of the judge, hoping that we would meet the high bar for obtaining a preliminary injunction. The judge did not rule in our favor, but continues to rule on the merits of the case, the meat of the case, to decide whether or not the agency has violated environmental laws by opening this refuge.
So, but in the meantime, though, the refuge is scheduled to open.
That's our understanding, although there is a growing cacophony of voices seeking to keep the refuge closed, the latest of which is Jared Polis, who sent or is in the process of sending a letter which calls on the Fish and Wildlife Service to keep the refuge closed until March of next year, until further sampling and testing of the air and the water and land is done, primarily because of the concerns of the 2013 flood, which, as he points out in his letter to the Department of Interior, dramatically changed the topography of the refuge, meaning that some of that contamination that is buried in place beneath the old Rocky Flat site might have migrated to the surface because of this flooding.
That's Randall Weiner, who's an attorney in the lawsuit that's seeking to stop the the Rocky Flats Wildlife Refuge from opening to the public. It is scheduled to open, in fact, this weekend. But as we're hearing, there are legal efforts to block that. We have two other guests in the studio, Michelle Gabrieloff Parish with Candelas Glows. And Michelle, we'll go next to you. Candelas, so just remind our listeners who might not be familiar that about the housing development and the various other buildings and development that is in the vicinity of that.
Yes, so Candelas is the name of the development that is adjacent to Rocky Flats, and that is sort of where we started in trying to raise awareness. But in working on that, we really realized that this is a fight against memory, of remembering what Rocky Flats is and was, and that a lot of people from Colorado remember that this is a nuclear Superfund site. This was the heart of the Cold War nuclear industry. We made 70,000 plutonium pits at Rocky Flats. And that is still at the core of what is being called the wildlife refuge now. So really, this is a fight about memory. It's about development. It's about housing. But it's also about the toll road and the idea that people could recreate at this site that for so many people from Colorado is associated with health damages and a legacy of contamination.
I mean, this idea of memory, I think that's so important, because just to put this in context, the half-life of plutonium is tens of thousands of years, a figure that's so unfathomable.
24,000 years.
That we haven't even had human civilization for those lengths of time for us to even have anything to compare this to.
Exactly. So humans are kind of up against plutonium in that way. And it's not the only contaminant out there. It's not the only carcinogen. But it is the one with the longest half-life of 24,900 years. And really what that means is that in 24,000 years, it'll still be deadly. So it is hard for us to wrap our minds around. And I think that's actually one of the challenges that we have, too. This is about memory, but it's also about an issue that's so big that sometimes people say we don't know what to do about it. We don't know how to handle it. We'd rather forget.
Well, tell us about your own personal experience. You're the founder of Candelas Glows. So why did you personally get involved in this?
I was actually studying with an elder of mine, Jonah Macy, who told me about Rocky Flats, even though I live right around the corner. So I live a mile and a half away from the boundary. My kid's school is 5,000 feet from the boundary. And when we moved there, I saw, you know, I'm from Colorado, so a lot of people from Colorado, if we don't know about Rocky Flats, we kind of know there's like something bad about it and something nuclear, but I didn't know what. So when we drove to Superior, where I live, from the mountains where we moved from, I saw that we were passing Rocky Flats, but I didn't know where the property went, and I thought maybe it was the water that I needed to be concerned about. So I looked and saw that we didn't get our water from there, so I felt safe. And after working with Joanna Macy and starting to talk with Rocky Mountain Peace and Justice folks who've been working on this for 40 years, I realized that it was inhalation of contaminated air, dust, soil.
And how it interacts with the lungs.
And the lungs. And I'm like, oh my gosh, here we are. I have three children. Here I am feeding them as much organic food as I can. Here I am, you know, I have a son with a lot of food allergies. So here we are keeping him on this really special diet. And meanwhile, he's inhaling this air that is coming off of Rocky Flats. And we know that the wind out there is really powerful. We've had two windshields broken just from the power of the wind. In Superior. So, you know, the wind is blowing all the way from Denver, Westminster, Superior, Arvada, all the way to Boulder. So when I started getting involved, I really didn't mean for it to go where it did. Part of what happened was I found out about the development, started doing protests at the grand openings of the development. And because of that, the developers threatened to sue me for millions of dollars if I didn't shut up, and also if I didn't take down everything that I had already said about Candelas. So that made me go and do more research so that I could make sure, you know, I could dot all my I's and cross all my T's and make sure that everything I was saying was factual. And I got more concerned. So really, it's thanks to them threatening to sue me for millions of dollars that I had to go and really learn about the history of the site, the contamination of the site, the controversies that have surrounded the site really from the beginning. The first whistleblowers at the site were during construction when they said, wait a minute, this plant is being sited upwind of a major metropolitan area like Denver, and we meant to have it downwind. So the history is amazing, and unfortunately, it's also really scary.
Now, Michelle, when you bought your house when you were moving to the area, did anybody at any point, a realtor, a neighbor, anybody mention anything about Rocky Flats and what was there?
No, nobody did. And also, we were renters. So even if somebody has to sign a waiver to purchase a home, a renter doesn't. So no, we had no idea. And again, I actually tried to ask around, and people were just like, oh, it's fine. There's no big deal. And we don't get our water from there. So I was assuaged for a really long time. It was not at the top of my priorities.
And I know as part of your work in all of this, you really have been trying to raise awareness amongst the people who live there. What reaction are you getting?
I'm getting a pretty mixed reaction. I think that generally what we have found is that people who know almost anything about Rocky Flats want to see it closed. They do not want to see this open for recreation. And people in the neighborhood who don't want to learn about the history and they don't want to, you know, it's like in order to live in Superior and on the Front Range, we have to know the difference between different types of radiation. Is it alpha? Is it gamma? Is it beta? Some people don't want to get into all of that, but they do feel that if there's a risk, why would we open it? And if there's a risk, why open it when there is so much beautiful space for us to recreate in already, and all of it right around the corner? So I think that's the main thing. I think some people who've had a hard time believing that it could be contaminated is partly because the housing around us is so expensive. So it's sort of this reverse thing where people kind of understand environmental justice enough that if it was all affordable housing, people would be like, oh yeah, of course it's contaminated. But because the housing around here is so expensive, the logic is sort of, there's no way it could be that contaminated, and they're selling million-dollar homes around here.
That is Michelle Gabrieloff Parish, and she is the founder of Candelas Glows, and she's one of our guests here today. I'd like to welcome our third guest, Brittany Gutermuth, and she's with the Rocky Mountain Peace and Justice Centre. For decades, the Rocky Mountain Peace and Justice Centre, in many ways it was the foundation of the organisation, has been working on this, going back to the encirclement, to the actions that happened 40 years ago. Now, Brittany, you're of a younger generation, which I think a lot of people would be inspired by, because as we have heard from Michelle, this is a problem of erasure in memory. And I know that when I have spoken to some of the activists who were really involved 40 years ago, they're very concerned about what's going to happen when they're gone. So as a young person, how did you get involved in this? And then we'll talk about the work of the Rocky Mountain Peace and Justice Centre.
So I got involved with the Rocky Mountain Peace and Justice Centre a little over 2 years. I was studying environmental leadership, getting my master's at Naropa University. And I was connected with the Rocky Mountain Peace and Justice Centre through my final thesis program. I was working with them, and then later started learning about nuclear guardianship and the work that they're doing, even though that wasn't my focus actually at the time when I was working with the Peace Center. But then we had a workshop. Joanna Macy actually came to Naropa, and I got to spend an entire weekend with her and folks from the Peace Center and my program learning about nuclear guardianship and learning about Rocky Flats. And that's when it finally occurred to me that this is what I need to be focusing on. And especially with so many people coming into Colorado for school, mostly CU, but also Naropa, that have no idea about Rocky Flats and that come here for our open space and to be active, they don't know about it. And so the thought of these people coming from out of state, have no idea about Rocky Flats, hearing this allure that the DOE and U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service are spinning about the refuge, are going to want to go there. And the signage is lacking, so they can't really make a truly informed decision if they want to risk their health by going onto this refuge and recreating. So I don't know that I ever really thought about it. I just started working on it.
And I know one of the big projects of the Rocky Mountain Peace and Justice Centre and the other organisations, in addition to the legal action, is work to get local school districts, Girl Scout groups, Boy Scout troops to sign a pledge that they will never send their groups there. And you have been very successful in that.
We have been. So a few different groups, Rocky Mountain Peace and Justice Center, Rocky Flats Right to Know, Candelas Glows, and a few other groups have been going to school district board meetings and asking them to take a pledge to not allow field trips to the refuge if and when it opens. And it's a controversial issue, so a lot of school boards don't want to take a stance, but the ones that have been really powerful, and our most recent is Denver Public Schools, which was huge. And right now the numbers reflect nearly 300,000 students that won't be allowed to go to Rocky Flats on field trips.
And what about Jefferson County Public Schools, which is just right behind Denver Public Schools in terms of the size? And Michelle, is that the school district your children are in? Because I know that's the surrounding area.
We're actually in Boulder Valley School District. So we did testify about this, and unanimously they banned field trips to the refuge. So
have Jeffco schools taken that pledge?
They haven't officially made a pledge not to allow field trips to Rocky Flats, but we're still pushing them.
Well, we are talking about Rocky Flats here, as we have done many times over the years at KGNU, because this is such a huge issue that impacts us locally. And as Michelle, you spoke so well about, it's also an issue of erasure of memory, because if we're only, say, a half generation away from that plant being opened to now opening it to a wildlife refuge, what's going to happen in 24,000 years when that plutonium could arguably be still active? And so that's what we're talking about on KGNU this morning, ahead of what is to be the scheduled opening of the wildlife refuge this coming weekend. That may not be 100% certain. Randall Weiner, who is the attorney representing the groups that have been working to legally stop the opening of the refuge, also joining us. And then, as you said earlier, Randall, Jared Polis is expected to send a letter. I know you've seen a draft of that letter, asking for the opening to be delayed at least until next year, until more testing has been done.
That's right. It's actually a signed letter, so we know that Representative Polis has sent this out, and he's not the only one. The government official with perhaps the who's closest to Rocky Flats with jurisdiction over these issues is Dr. Mark Johnson, who's the executive director of the Jefferson County Health Department, and he's come out against opening the refuge until further studies are done. And as Brittany was saying, we now have over 300,000 students from Denver Metro to other school districts who are banned from field trips onto Rocky Flats. The Daily Camera came out in an editorial taking the position that Rocky Flats should remain closed to recreation. The number of folks who are looking at this issue who are not captives to the Department of Energy and the money that they have doled out for this project is growing. And the question is, why isn't the Fish and Wildlife Service going slow? Is this a legacy of the secrecy from the Cold War plant from many years ago? And that legacy continues by ignoring public opinion and by moving quickly and trying to get something done before opposition gels? One has to question, and in our case, we're taking one step, which is to go into a federal court in front of a judge who hopefully is disinterested and will rule on in the favor of the laws. But so many other things are happening around this issue besides the legal case, and perhaps Brittany and Michelle could talk about some of the actions which are occurring this weekend.
We will, and I just want to let listeners know, though, the actual geographic area, because as we have been saying, there are many people who have been following this who have lived in this area for the last four decades, so they're well aware. Many other people, maybe this is the first time they've heard about this as an issue. So in terms of the geographic area, there are the entire site is not open to the public because there is that Superfund site that is will always be closed off. But it's the surrounding area that is of concern. So Michelle, can you talk a little bit about exactly where we're talking about geographically here?
Mm-hmm. It's the big swath of open space people see as they drive between Denver and Boulder. The windmills are really good landmarks. That's on the northwest corner of the property.
That's Highway 93.
Yeah, Highway 93, you can see off of 36 on Indiana. And really, it is a nuclear Superfund buffer zone. You know, and I actually wish we could keep referring it to that as that until it's open as a wildlife refuge, because it is a nuclear Superfund buffer zone. And there is still a nuclear Superfund in the core. So that is still owned by Department of Energy. It's still managed by them. And they gifted the rest of it to U.S. Fish and Wildlife. So, again, I do think Randy is onto something, and that this might be part of a trend of trying to just erase some of the issues and controversy that's been at the site for so many years. And, you know, for us, we really think this is not about who is to blame or what happened in the past. It's right now a super important public health concern. We're not trying to blame somebody. We're just trying to get our communities protected.
That's Michelle Gabrielle of Parish. She's the founder of Candelas Glows. Also in the studio this morning, Randall Weiner, the attorney representing the various different groups involved in the legal action to block the opening to the public of the Rocky Flats Wildlife Refuge, and also Brittany Guttermuth with the Rocky Mountain Peace and Justice Centre. Michelle?
Yeah. Well, I just want to say, so this is our pending lawsuit, and this is the community's response to the proposed opening. Also, the town of Superior has its own legal action filed to keep this place closed. So you have community groups, you have a municipality suing to keep this place closed, and you have school districts saying keep it closed. So again, what is the rush? Why is U.S. Fish and Wildlife trying to force this wildlife refuge down our throats? Nobody wants it. So their grand opening is proposed for this Saturday, so we will have an action. We will be at the EPA headquarters on Saturday from 1 to 3:30.
And where protest. Exactly is that?
1595 Wine Coop. It's off off of 15th and Wine Coop, 16th
so
and Wine
Lodo
Coop.
In Lodo and Denver.
In Denver at the EPA offices. Some people were hoping that we would try to recreate the encirclement that happened about 40 years ago, which was amazing and helped get the plant shut down when it was still in operation. But because we have so many concerns about being out there and of having children out there, we thought that downtown would be a better place to be able to invite children and families to come and protest with us and say, we actually do not want this recreation area. That's not a recreation area. It's a nuclear Superfund buffer zone, and let it stay that way.
Well, in terms of, I'm getting back to the geographic area, if the wildlife center, the wildlife refuge, where would the opening be? Like, where would people access that from the road? Do we know that yet?
They have a couple of different openings that they have been constructing gates at, and maybe we'll let somebody else speak to where they're planning on opening first. I'm actually not sure.
The reason I asked that is I know one of the issues that has been raised recently is the lack of signage in and around that. So I'm wondering, at some of those entry points, will there be any signage there to let people know what's going on? Randall Weiner, do you know?
The signage has been a point of contention because there was a lengthy process involving the public that required a reasonable review of the history. And language is worked out, and the signs that are proposed to be posted don't include that language that was worked out so laboriously over a decade ago. So that is a point of contention. And frankly, if you're speeding by on a bicycle, are you even going to stop and read a sign that tells you about danger when the agency that's constructing the sign is trying to hide the dangers under the dirt, under the dirt with no cap, by the way?
We're speaking about Rocky Flats here at KGNU Boulder, Denver and Fort Collins. And in terms of actions, there is the one on Saturday at the EPA headquarters in Lodo and Denver, 15th and Wincoop. Brittany, I know the Rocky Mountain Peace and Justice Center is involved in ongoing events. There are regular meetings. There's a nuclear guardianship program where I know that Leroy Moore and the others are trying to get to grips with how to deal with this waste. This waste isn't going away. The waste that has been, that's residual from the nuclear weapons industry. And so that's a discussion that happens regularly at Rocky Mountain Peace and Justice Center. I know there are many different actions in the local community. What are some of the other events that are happening?
So regularly, the Nuclear Guardianship has public meetings on Tuesdays, every Tuesday from 12 p.m. to 2 p.m. at China Gourmet in North Boulder. So that's something regular that folks can do to get involved. This week is especially exciting because we have the Alliance for Nuclear Accountability in town. It is a coalition of over 30 organizations throughout the states that are representing other communities that are facing similar issues that we're facing here with Rocky Flats. The Alliance has been around for about 30 years, and they're a national network of organizations working to address issues of nuclear weapons production and waste cleanup. And each year they have two meetings. One meeting is in the spring in Washington, D.C., where we meet with our congresspeople and talk to them about ANA issues, but also our local issues. And in the fall, the Alliance goes to different cities and has a fall meeting. And right now they're here in Boulder, which is where I'll be heading directly after this. And so we'll be having report issues from all the different groups. We'll be talking about nuclear weapons production and waste cleanup. And on Saturday, we have a panel event actually at Naropa University in the Performing Arts Center. And we'll have panelists including Judith Moline, who is with the Rocky Mountain Peace and Justice Center and is also on the board of the Alliance for Nuclear Accountability. Rick Wayman, who is with the Nuclear Age Peace Foundation and the Alliance for Nuclear Accountability. John Lipsky, who is a former FBI special agent that was involved in raiding Rocky Flats. Dr. Michael Ketterer, who is a PhD in analytical chemistry from CU Boulder. and Elizabeth Panzer, who is a mother and concerned citizen, and also Randall Weiner.
That's all happening on Saturday. We'll put a link to the Rocky Mountain Peace and Justice website, rmpjc.org, because all of those upcoming events are listed. And can anyone just come along if they are interested in these meetings, the ongoing monthly guardianship meetings, or the events happening over the weekend?
So the nuclear guardianship meetings on Tuesday, anyone can is welcome to come to those. The Alliance for Nuclear Accountability meetings that are happening now are just for people who are members of the Rocky Mountain Peace and Justice Center. So it's about, we have about 25 people that will be attending the meetings, but it's not open to the public.
Just this broader issue of nuclear accountability, that we're still in the process of not just the creation of nuclear weapons, but in fact, the ramping up of it. And that was actually under the Obama administration, a commitment of several trillion dollars to the nuclear arsenal. And at the same time, we still haven't figured out what to do with the waste from the last batch of nuclear weapons that have been manufactured. This is obviously an ongoing discussion.
Definitely, yeah.
Well, if people have a question or comment or they'd like to join the conversation, the number here is 303-442-4242, 303-442-4242. I'd like to go back to Michelle Gabrieloff Parish with the Candelas Glow, the founder of that organization. I know you want to weigh in, and then I'd want to talk longer about this issue of erasure of memory and how we can create something that will last for 24,000 years in our collective consciousness, or create some type of historical marker. But did you want to weigh in on something there?
It's actually, it's related. So as part of the signage, what we've seen is that they want to start speaking about what happened at Rocky Flats as manufacturing weapon deterrents. So they are calling the nuclear bombs, basically, that were manufactured, the core of the nuclear bomb that was manufactured at Rocky Flats, weapons deterrence. So
it's a sanitizing of the language.
It's a complete sanitation. It is, how will anyone remember? How is anyone supposed to know what that means? And I can't think of a greater weapon than a nuclear bomb, so I don't see how it could be a weapons deterrent. So that is part of that erasure of memory. And in terms of remembering, you know, I think that's part of the idea of nuclear guardianship. It's almost a monastic practice. It takes a lot of courage to look into the heart of nuclear waste issues and the legacy of a lot of the sites throughout the U.S. Even just the sites that are related to Rocky Flats are numerous, where our waste ended up going and where the uranium was originally mined. All of that is something to be remembered. I was hoping that we could have artists get involved and we could memorialize the site. I actually went to the Rocky Flats Stewardship Council once and tried to propose that we do memorialize the site, and with something that will last for essentially forever, something made of stone or really heavy metal. And they said, well, we already have a stone plaque. So, but we have been calling on artists to help us memorialize this and talk about it. And
there was that sculpture, the war
Jeff
horse.
Jeff Geip, yeah. So Jeff Geip was originally a part of these first protests that we had, and we started calling for art. He said, oh my gosh, I have all these sketches for artwork that I want to do. And his father worked at the plant for a really long time, I think about 25 years, and was sick with a variety of illnesses that came from having worked at Rocky Flats. And so, yeah, he ended up making this Cold War horse, which is incredible. And it is along the lines of what we need. People should definitely look it up. It's the Cold War horse. And it is housed now overlooking Rocky Flats and Candelas. And we still need something that is larger and greater, because the horse is not going to last 24,000 years.
And wasn't that subject to vandalism at some point as well? Wasn't there an issue with that?
Yeah, it was. The moment it went up, somebody came and tore it down. And people suspected, all kinds of people, maybe people involved with the developers. And someone said, no, it's probably just teenagers. But the police did confirm that there's no way that it was just a spur of the moment thing. Someone needed a heavy duty winch to be able to pull down this horse. So it's much more secure now. And it's been, it has a concrete base now that is, grounded to the floor, has lights and also a really amazing description next to it. But yeah, it was subject to vandalism, and there are people that want us to forget and think of it as a beautiful place for bunnies and elk, and think of it as a place where weapons deterrents were made. And it's not. It's a nuclear superfund site.
Are there any other artists getting involved, or any other discussions about how to create some type of long-lasting signage or memorial, or I'm not even sure what to call it, because yeah. you don't want to celebrate it, so it's not a memorial in the traditional sense, but it's a marker to keep this in our consciousness.
Yeah, sort of the way that we have the Vietnam War Memorial. It's a somber place. You go there and you're sad about part of our history. So, something like that. There are a lot of artists actually that are being involved, and Jeff Geip just curated two different art openings, one at the Boulder Public Library, and now it's at the Denver Public Library, that has some artwork from other artists, and there's still things budding. There's a couple of documentaries being made. On Saturday at the protest in Denver, we have a couple of photographers coming who want to start making photographic art also out of this story.
Do you think, as part of this erasure of memory, there's a tendency to look back at Rocky Flats as part of an old era that's in history? It was the Cold War, and to not even pay attention to the fact that the nuclear weapons arsenal is, it's being ramped up, it's being heavily invested in, trillions of dollars. And I said that was under the Obama administration, that money was committed to it as well. But we do tend to have this way of compartmentalizing things, it seems, that we'll relegate that to history because that happened then.
Absolutely.
It's still going on.
Absolutely. That is definitely what is happening. And it's seen as like an old person issue, honestly. And we've been changing that. The other thing is that, you know, first of all, there's still people who are sick because of Rocky Flats. So that's current. It's happening right now. I lost my train of thought.
That's okay. Well, I'll remind our listeners that was Michelle Gabrieloff at Parrish, the founder of the group Candelas Glows, one of our guests today, along with Brittany Guttermuth with the Rocky Mountain Peace and Justice Centre, and attorney Randall Weiner, who's representing the various different groups involved in the legal action to prevent the opening of Rocky Flats Wildlife Refuge. And go ahead, Randall.
Well, I wanted to mention the two other groups that I represent that weren't mentioned, the Environmental Information Network and the Rocky Flats Neighborhood Association, have all banded together to try to keep the refuge closed until further studies are done.
This idea of just waiting until more studies are done, and I've seen this play across a variety of different issues, particularly when it comes to environmentalism here in the US. It's quite a different attitude from what you see maybe in other countries, where instead of an abundance of caution, let's proceed with caution until we're fully assured that this is safe. It's like, let's proceed until someone can show us that it's not safe. Do you know what I mean? I mean, is there a legal issue going on there as well as maybe a cultural or a mental issue going on?
Well, the common term is the precautionary principle. And that would suggest that when there's a risk, that actions are slowed until we know if indeed something that could cause a great deal of damage is safe. And in this case, we have the National National Environmental Policy Act and the National Wildlife Refuge Systems Administration Act, which suggests that studies need to be done before a federal agency takes a significant action. Because in large part, our federal government has many tricks up its sleeve for easing its activities. And there were three tricks that were used here at Rocky Flats that we've brought to the judge's attention. Trick number one is that the sampling that was done for the plutonium was woefully inadequate, in large part because the price tag was initially $37 billion for cleanup, and it went down to $7 billion from the bidder. And so the trick number one was, let's sample in these 30-acre grids, and take 25 samples per acre.
And sampling of soil, is it?
And this is sampling for plutonium in the soil. And then do 25 samples within this 30-acre grid, which is about a sample per acre, and average the results. And as a result, you neutralize any hot spots that you might find, and it's very difficult. I handled to actually find those hotspots. I handled a case, Globeville, down in North Denver, and we sampled for arsenic, which is far less of a dangerous contaminant, and the sampling was 50 or so samples per acre, not less than one per acre for plutonium. So trick number two, if you'll give me a second, trick number two is that there's no cap over the contaminated areas of Rocky Flats, and there were buildings that were built deep into the soil, 6, 7, 8, 9 stories deep. And these buildings were contaminated over the years, ductwork and buildings that were called had infinity rooms because the contamination was so high. And these components, these building components, were buried in place. And in my business as an environmental lawyer, when there's contamination with a dump, you put a cap over it. And then you have a leachate collection system to make sure that water doesn't migrate. At Rocky Flats, there's no cap. The only cap is dirt, which means that burrowing animals can bring stuff to the surface, and flooding, which Jared Polis was concerned about, flooding like in 2013, can greatly affect the topography and make those contaminants that are buried come to the surface. And then trick number three is that the cleanup standards for Rocky Flats were higher than any other nuclear facility in the country, including Hanford and some of the places off the coast where we've tested for nuclear bombs. And those three tricks made it very difficult to determine if there were hot spots and whether or not the cleanup was ever adequate.
That's Randall Weiner, an environmental attorney representing the coalition of groups that have filed legal action to prevent the opening of the Rocky Flats Wildlife Refuge to the public. Of course, it's the site of the former nuclear weapons plant, and it is scheduled to be opened this weekend. As we've been hearing, Congressman Jared Polis has weighed in and is sending a letter to ask for that opening to be delayed until further testing is done. In terms of legislative approach to this, and we do know the Tennis Superior is also involved in a separate legal action to also block the opening. Jared Polis, congressman, but he's also a gubernatorial candidate. Are we seeing Rocky Flats as an issue that's playing out in the state legislature? I mean, do we have enough folks who are state representatives, people serving at the state house, but also serving in Congress in Washington, D.C., really paying attention and understanding the legacy of Rocky Flats and the current situation? Brittany?
So we've been meeting with some state legislators, including Steve Finberg, Casey Becker, Edie Hooten, and they have all publicly spoken out against Rocky Flats, that they are against the opening of Rocky Flats. We worked briefly with Steve Finberg about trying to get some legislation for signage or for studies to be done, whatever we could kind of get our hands on. We weren't productive in that, though we're going to keep pushing for it. We were in D.C. in May trying to work with Congress people, trying to ask people to make a stance against Rocky Flats, publicly stating that they don't want it to be open, trying to create some kind of legislation. And they're lacking. I mean, our Congress people aren't speaking out well enough to represent all of the people that are against the opening. And we have both a national and a local campaign to contact DOE and Fish and to contact our Congress people, telling them that we don't want this refuge to be open because we believe that it's not safe. Over, I believe, nearly 200 letters have been sent to local Congress people, and we're still waiting for them to do something.
And what about Senators Michael Bennett, Cory Gardner? Have they weighed in or taken a position or even indicated they have awareness about what's going on?
You know, Bennett's office has been most receptive. They've been really interested in learning about the issue. They haven't actually taken any action, but at least they've been receptive and learning about it, and they are concerned. We met with Candace Valsing, who is one of Bennett's staff people in D.C., and she was concerned. She was very concerned about, first, how little she knew about the issue, but also, I mean, she wanted to know all of the studies, all the proof that we have, and we do have a lot of science on our side saying that it's not safe, and she was really interested in finding that out and learning for herself that it's not safe. So at least she was interested, but we're still waiting on Bennett to do something.
Well, we have about 15 minutes left with our panel this morning, and we do have some calls coming in. If people have a question or a comment, 303-442-4242 is the number to call. I'll invite our panelists to pop some headphones on so you'll be able to hear from our guest. And then I'll also like to talk a little bit more about some of the other issues that it's not just the opening of the Rocky Flats, but Michelle, I know that you're also concerned about future housing developments going in there and then the opening of the road as well. And so we'll talk about that in a minute. But I'll welcome our first caller to the air. We have June calling in from Wheat Ridge. You're live on KGNU.
Hi, I think we should never open that area. I think that we should look into many secrets that have been suppressed. I've actually talked to people, Boy Scout leaders of my children, that actually have found barrels and seen things up in the foothills. I've looked at maps, and I see lots of trails from years way back of dirt roads that head up in every direction. And I think that there's a lot of secrets and a lot of things that should not be put under the, you know, swept away. This is a very serious, serious issue that's impacted our whole environment, especially the day that they had some burning in the wind, and it affected a lot of people. A lot of people have died, breast cancer and different cancers in Arvada. I think we should not let this continue. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for calling in, June. I'd be really interested to hear, it sounds like June has lived in the area for a while, if there are people who are listening who maybe are relative newcomers to the area who maybe don't actually know about this, and this could be a new topic, because I think, as we have been talking about, this is a challenge. How do we create memory for all the people moving in, for the future generations? But Michelle, let's talk a little bit about some of the other issues you're concerned about. The wildlife refuge opening is one thing, but there are also other developments that could be happening in the area, the road, the ring road, and the possibility of more houses going in there as well.
Mm-hmm. And with all of that, I think it was Judy. Judy brought up actually some amazing points. Even when U.S. Fish and Wildlife was doing their final sweep of the site, they found a barrel in a pond. And it's
so
the same.
When we talk about barrels, what exactly is that?
So a barrel is where they used to put the nuclear waste, and the type of barrel that they found matches the type that they used to store the waste in.
And I know it was well documented that it was a very haphazard approach, to put it mildly, in terms of the disposal of the waste.
I mean, it's outrageous. They left tons of barrels out in the open air, leaking, collapsing on top of each other for over a decade. But then there are these stories of these barrels that people find around in the area, like Judy mentioned, and U.S. Fish and Wildlife found one as they were sweeping the site to get ready to try to open. And we were really appalled that here they have a barrel that matches what the waste was put into, and they didn't test it for radionuclides. They said, we did test it. We tested it for magnesium and calcium and, you know, all kinds of things that no one is concerned about out there. So there is something to that. And there is a lot that we don't know about. And when they tried to do the cleanup, even though we don't know how to clean nuclear waste yet, they could only clean the things they knew about. And the site was shrouded in so much secrecy that they didn't know enough of what to clean. So now,
go ahead.
You know, they are talking about, so there's Candelas, which actually, if you consider all phases of that development, it's the largest development in Colorado. We have to pump water from the Colorado River to have that site have enough water. So that's part of the Gros Dam Reservoir expansion. There's a toll road that is proposed, which I also find so ironic. I'm like, so you're saying it's a wildlife refuge, but you're also saying it's a good place for a toll road? That seems counterproductive to me. And, you know, along with the housing, you know, once you have housing and a toll road, you have businesses, you have schools. You know, now there's another school out there that's just as close to Rocky Flats as my kid's school. And I really feel the need to stand up and say, we can't do this, and the community does not want it. So again, that's why we're protesting on Saturday.
Well, Brittany Guttermuth with the Rocky Mountain Peace and Justice Center, you wanted to weigh in?
Yeah, well, going back to barrels, finding barrels and things like that on the site, I think it's important to note that when they were doing the cleanup, below 6 feet, they weren't required to clean up any of that. So plutonium is invisible to the human eye. So we're coming across these things that we're thinking, oh, they're probably scary, they're probably contaminated. But like Randy mentioned, there's prairie dogs, which we see all over Boulder, that burrow up to 10 feet down. So they're just doing their normal daily thing, and they're bringing up plutonium 6 feet under that wasn't remediated at all. They're bringing that back up with them. And another thing that I wanted to mention, something ironic, when we were in D.C., we were meeting with DOE Legacy Management, who is responsible for the Superfund sites, and we were talking about testing, talking about air monitoring. We asked them to put in some kind of device to do air monitoring, and David at DOE said that they didn't want to do that because they didn't want to disturb the soil. How ironic is that?
So in terms of the ongoing monitoring that's happening, and we did mention the floods, we're in the 5-year anniversary week of that. And at that time, I remember speaking with Kristen Iverson, who has written extensively about this, about the fact that the water monitors on Woman Creek and Walnut Creek had actually been knocked out of commission because of the floodwaters. And Randall, you mentioned that Jared Polis, in this letter that he's submitting today to request a delay in the opening, he said the floodwaters changed significantly the topography of that area. What monitoring is going on? Is there water monitoring happening consistently? Is there air monitoring happening? And is there ongoing soil monitoring? I mean, what exactly is the monitoring situation?
So currently only water is being monitored. And occasionally there are events that suggest that plutonium is migrating. But the concern, as Michelle mentioned, is that the high winds in the area will cause dirt and dust to migrate off-site. We already have significant evidence of plutonium off-site, away from the refuge into the neighborhoods that are downwind of Rocky Flats. So there should be air monitoring at a minimum, always, continuous. You know, CEM, or continuous emission monitoring, is a standard at many power plants around the country. Why not at Rocky Flats? You know, really, where are our state and federal agencies when they're needed? Why isn't the state, for instance, standing up and saying, hey, let's sample the cancer rates? The state keeps a cancer registry. Why aren't the studies being done to see whether or not Rocky Flats, after 40 years of operation, is increasing cancers? And instead, the state is clamping down on that. Why isn't the state insisting upon signage? Why aren't the local municipalities standing up and insisting upon signage? We know why the federal government isn't, because the Department of Energy is doling out enough money around the country to try to normalize these facilities. But where, in God's name, are the state and local governments that supposedly report to those of us, like Judy, who just called us, and those of us who've been protesting for decades? I'm actually new to this, but the groups haven't. Where are those government agencies trying to make sure that something like this is safe?
Well, are there any last-minute legal efforts to try and stop this weekend's scheduled opening? I know Jared Polis, as you said, is submitting this letter today. Which agency is he actually submitting that to? Is that to Fish and Wildlife?
Right. It's to Ryan Zinke at the Department of Interior, which is responsible for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And no, we tried to keep Rocky Flats closed with a preliminary injunction, but the judge will still have the opportunity to close Rocky Flats if he rules in our favor on the legal issues. And we are hoping that the judge rules promptly and actually decides to reverse the action taken by Fish and Wildlife Service and closes the refuge. So we have this window. And another big question, why can't the Fish and Wildlife Service wait until a U.S. federal judge decides whether or not it's violated the law? So we are hoping that this window of Rocky Flats being open has a very short time frame.
And I know sometimes the wheels of justice can move slowly, or at least through the courts. Is there a sense of the time frame? Is there a time period when the judge needs to make a decision, or has there been an indication as to when a decision might come down in this lawsuit?
The judge has ruled promptly on every other motion, and we hope for a prompt decision this time too.
But not necessarily a month. We don't know when. We'll be as vague as we can be this morning. Okay. Well, we do have another caller calling in. So if we want to pop our headphones back on, we've got Jim calling in from Boulder. You're live on KGNU this morning.
Great talk. Years ago, I used to go to the monthly meetings, and it turned out they were always promising us everything was okay because they had all these monitors, but they never performed the tests on the monitors. It's like they gathered air samples, but they never analyzed them. So they put their money into PR, not into, as you're saying, they won't measure the air. It's just, it's crazy. When we went to some of the hearings, they would have PR people run them. Just recently in the last year, you know, they wouldn't let us ask questions. They tried to have us be in little separate groups where we weren't allowed to talk to each other between groups or make up questions for the whole group. So the DOE is just a big PR thing, trying to minimize it and get off cheap, not clean it up.
Well, Jim, thanks for your call. This issue of testing, I know that a lot of groups like Rocky Mountain Peace and Justice Center have actually been the ones doing a lot of the testing, because we're not seeing ongoing testing happening. I mean, I know soil samples were taken, and you said, Brittany, that you have a lot of scientific data. That's because groups like yourselves have actually been the ones who've been doing the testing when the federal agencies haven't. I know there has been ongoing testing there. Well, we have just about 4 minutes left this morning here with our panelists as we look ahead to the potential opening this weekend of the Rocky Flats Wildlife Refuge. Our guests in studio, Brittany Guttermuth with the Rocky Mountain Peace and Justice Centre, Michelle Gabrieloff Parrish, the founder of Candelas Glows, and environmental attorney Randall Weiner, who's representing a whole coalition of groups that are involved in legal action to stop the opening of the Rocky Flats Wildlife Refuge. If it is open, they're hoping it will be closed again retroactively. Well, in the last few minutes, let's just let our listeners know of the events happening this weekend. To coincide with the opening, Michelle, you said there is an action happening at the EPA office in Denver. That's at 15th and Wincoop in Lodo. What time is that happening?
From 1 to 3:30. Bring your hazmat suit. You can just bring a painter's suit and we'll wear those for some good photo ops and to try to raise awareness. There's so many people that will be downtown that need to know the story of Rocky Flats. I think one more thing, if I can say, is that, you know, we do have a lot of research and science on our side that says this is not safe. Also, this is a matter of common sense. So before the floods had happened, we were calling on the agencies to have some sort of oversight, because even if the testing shows that it's somewhat safe right now, that doesn't account for flooding that can happen, and then the flooding did happen. It doesn't account for a drought and a dust bowl or a dust storm that could happen out there that could be devastating to our communities. And, you know, a lot of this, it's good that we have the science, it's good that we have the research, and a lot of this is common sense. Do you think that a nuclear superfund site and its buffer zone should be open to the public?
And in terms of the ongoing work at Candelas Glows, what are some of the ways that people who are listening, if they choose to get involved, how might they connect with you, and what are some of the ongoing actions that you have?
Yeah, I think our Facebook page is actually the most active and the place where we have the most research and the most up-to-date news. So it's facebook.com/CandelasGlows. Candelas is CANDELAS.
And that's the name of the housing development.
The development, yes. So we're CandelasGlows/RockyFlatsGlows, because we know that a lot of this is about the memory of Rocky Flats. And then we also have our website, which is CandelasGlows.com.
We'll put a link to that online at KGNU.org. Brittany Guttermuth, you mentioned the events happening this weekend. They're not specifically open to the public, but there are those monthly nuclear guardianship events. And that's not just on Rocky Flats. You're looking at the broader issue of nuclear waste in this country and the guardianship of that, because as we've been talking about, the half-life of plutonium is, 24,000 years and then some. What are some of the opportunities for listeners to maybe get involved with the work of the Rocky Mountain Peace and Justice Centre as it pertains to this issue?
So yes, definitely coming to our weekly meetings on Tuesdays, 12 to noon at China Gourmet in North Boulder. And while the ANA meetings aren't open to the public, we do have a panel discussion Saturday night with the panelists that I mentioned earlier that is free and it is open to the public. And the title of that is "There is No Refuge from Nuclear War or Nuclear Waste, Rocky Flats in Context." And so that'll be a really good opportunity to come to listen to people that have been impacted and have been studying Rocky Flats and the dangers.
And where is that panel happening?
That's at Naropa University.
At the downtown of it?
At the main campus.
The main campus. And Randall Weiner, I know you're going to be one of the panelists in that. We just have a minute left. For people who are listening who are maybe thinking of taking a hike this weekend, and maybe they now know a little bit more about Rocky Flats. I mean, what's your message now to people who are listening? Granted, you're very much involved in the legal efforts to stop this, but as a local resident, as a dad, as somebody who lives here as well, you know, what would you like to say to people?
Rocky Flats has never been proven safe for human visits. And I should say never in quotes, because the kind of sampling and testing that was done was inadequate. And currently there is a lawsuit to keep Rocky Flats closed based upon environmental violations. So I would urge folks to think very seriously about going through those gates as they're biking or hiking or horseback riding, and think about the legacy that Michelle has been talking about, and think about the 40 years of fight that the Rocky Mountain Peace and Justice Center has been engaged in. You know, the encirclement that has been referred to was 16,000 or so people linking hands to try to completely encircle Rocky Flats. It was Boulder's Woodstock. I still run into people all around Boulder who say, oh yes, I linked hands back in 1985, I believe, to try to keep Rocky Flats closed. And And those efforts need a memory, as you were saying so eloquently. It's that memory that's being erased with newcomers, and it's the job of the nuclear guardians to keep that memory alive and to tell people, warn people, they can make their own choice, but warn people about the dangers of going under Rocky Flats today.
But we will continue to talk about it here on KGNU, and I'd like to thank all our guests, Attorney Randall Weiner, Michelle Gabrielle of Parish with Candelas Close, and Brittany Guttermuth with the Rocky Mountain Peace and Justice Centre. We link to their organisations at kgnu.org. I'm Maeve Conran. Thank you so much for listening. Stay tuned for the Morning Sound Alternative.